Our mission today for CD is to build a lifestyle, a dance lifestyle for the grown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has resonated with a lot of our dancers. And instantly, I think as a client, you're like, yes, that's me, that's where I want to be. Or you're like, nope, that's not really my vibe. And then you're able to make a clear decision. I think it's helpful for us running the business to have that clear vision, but also for clients who are wanting to see if this is a good fit for them.
Hi, I'm Diana, certified career strategist, leadership, and sales coach. Welcome to the Spotlight Project, where you'll be listening to a one-time, raw, and unfiltered career conversation of everyday people willing to share their stories. This podcast is being recorded on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Spotlight Project podcast, the podcast where we shine a spotlight on people's unique career stories. I am your hostess, Diana Chung, and I'm here with returning guest, actually, Briggs Long Chung. She's a director of operations at Culturally Defined Dance Family, endearingly known as CD, and they're a local Vancouver-based dance studio, actually my dance studio. So I'm really excited to dig into this with B today. Welcome, Briggs. Welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, hi, I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you, especially when we first did this. It was like a pilot experiment that was really ghetto on Instagram story. And now it's legit. So I'm so excited to have you here. Briggs, I would love for you to do a little bit more zhuzhing of your intro because I gave a very generic one. But can you introduce yourself to the audience? Tell us what pronouns you go by and describe to us the job and the work that you do with CD.
Of course. Hello. My name is Brigitte, but everyone calls me Briggs, and I use she, her pronouns. I run and operate a dance company called Culturally Defined. And what I do at the company, I oversee the logistics, the operations, and my main goal is focusing on kind of creating a path for new community members to feel really welcome in the space, AKA marketing and creating a beautiful studio.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. You know, when we think about B, we think about you as the operational brains, but you do a lot more than that. You also take care of the sales side of things, do all the marketing, the social media content management, and you teach on top of that too.
I'd like to say I'm a professional multitasker.
Yeah. I saw that on the website. I feel like that defines you
really
accurately, right?
Yeah, I feel good about that one. Yeah.
Exactly. And we're going to, I mean, Chris is also, so your partner, Chris, who runs CD with you and also is your partner in life. We had Chris on this podcast much earlier as well. So for those of you who are interested in hearing about Chris's side on the more creative side of things, tune into that episode. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to have you, Briggs, because I think it's cool to hear about how the two of you sort of balance your work, but as well as your relationship when you're running a small business, but we'll get into that. Briggs, I always like to start a little bit with who you are. And a lot of that comes from your upbringing and a little bit about your family dynamic before we start talking about your profession. Cause I feel like how people were raised and what their upbringing was like and the values that were instilled often reflect in the type of work that they choose to do. So let's talk a little bit about your early years. So I know your parents are immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Your father is he originally from Mauritius, but then he's also British, right?
That's right.
And your mother's Chinese?
She is from Hong Kong. So
from Hong Kong.
I'm a little bit of a mutt. I feel like every time I talk about my background, it's like a 10-minute spiel, but here we go.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about maybe about your parents' arrival to Vancouver, how you guys made it out here in the early days of your childhood.
Mm-hmm. So I'm born and raised in Vancouver mostly. You know, I call Vancouver my home by far. My mom is from Hong Kong. She's born and raised there. My dad is Chinese Mauritian. So he and his family are from Mauritius in a beautiful island in South Africa. But when he was 5, his family moved over to London, UK. So he's grown up with a very British background within the British culture. So that's, I'd say he would identify with like a British background for sure. So his side of this family doesn't speak any Chinese. They speak English, French, and Creole. That's why I have a French name. And my mom's side obviously speaks Cantonese. So I've, you know, I've always grown up with quite a mix actually of cultures since I was very young. Both my parents were very into traveling. And so when I was young, and I'm the first kid, so they took me around to see the world as an infant. And I think having started that at such a young age really allowed me to build an appreciation for different cultures, and being exposed to different environments was very valuable for me, I would say, today. Mm. So in addition to my family being, you know, a bit all over the world, I also spent 3 years in Singapore. So my family, I was born in Vancouver. And then when I was five, I went with my family to Singapore. My dad had a job there, so we moved there, which was amazing. I honestly bring back a lot of memories from there because it was such a culture shock. Even at 5 years old, you know, I'm very young, but I still was thrown into, you know, new school, new home, new culture, new languages. And Singapore is a beautiful, beautiful city. And I think I'm really grateful for the time that I was able to spend there.
Mm. So that's such a unique upbringing, Chris.
Yeah, that's why I call myself a bit of a mutt. Yeah. Feel like, I think that those experiences really built my appreciation for just like being in a new space and being able to adapt really quickly. I think those were big takeaways from that. But in terms of my parents, so how do we get here? Parents, mom's from Hong Kong, dad's from living in London. They happened to meet in Hong Kong and then started dating. And just coincidentally, both were actually residing in Vancouver, but my mom was at home visiting family. My dad was there working. So like a weird, crazy connection. And then they met in Hong Kong, moved back to Vancouver. And that's when we started the family, our family. And I'd like to kind of elaborate on all this because I overlook sometimes the value that I had brought on me, just having seen so much of the world at such a young age. I think, you know, being those three big cities, Hong Kong, London, and Singapore, I think like I'm so lucky to have connections and made, you know, have family members all over, and, you know, just feeling really lucky about it. Exposed to the art and the food and the history and the culture of all these. Like I love the big mumble jumble of it all.
Totally. That makes a lot of sense. Can I ask, I mean, we're going to get into your job stuff in a second, but I wonder if this resonates with you. So myself, I grew up in like mainly a Korean immigrant household, but I always felt like I grappled with this tension of duality. Oh. So the idea that I was raised in a Korean traditional household with a lot of Korean traditions and a mixed language of English and Korean, but then I grew up in a primarily white community. So this idea of you want to assimilate to the community around you, at the same time preserve your heritage. So I wonder for you, as someone who has like almost three different heritage identities, like did you experience conflict or tension with it, or how do you reconcile three similar but also very different cultures, and I assume different values systems too, right?
Absolutely. Well, I see it in my parents all the time. You know, my dad doesn't speak any Chinese, my mom does, and even that in itself causes a lot of it's not negative tension, but it's definitely like as a child being in that household, you learn to like, you know, I have to speak to my mom this way, my dad to this way, but there's some things that they can't communicate over. They both speak English totally fine, but you know, you have kind of like a nice secret language with your mom. And you know, you learn to build relationships with both of them separately because they don't at a certain level, maybe understand that deeply the cultures that they were both brought up in. But as the child, you're able to see through a different lens. You see a little bit of that, a little bit of this, and thankfully I was taught to speak Cantonese when I was quite young, so that part has always been really cool to be able to mix the two. But I would say in general though, it's been an interesting challenge to navigate both. I think I try and take the positives from both sides and blend that together. in the household itself wasn't too much of a struggle, but I think mainly I noticed most of the difference coming back from Singapore, moving back to Vancouver after having had all the culture shock. I almost had like a reverse culture shock coming back, because I was 8 by the time I came back to Vancouver, and I was like, whoa, like, what's going on? You know, school's so different, the way people talk, the way people act, kids, you know. That was, I remember that distinctly being an interesting transition for myself.
Yeah.
Into the Vancouver life, which is funny because people were like, oh, you're from here though. But like, how do you not know this? But culture's just so different. And yeah, it was a good challenge, but overall, I value that time that I was able to see the new stuff.
Yeah, totally. And you figure it out too. I feel like when you just grow up in a household, you're like, this is normal. It's normal that we speak Cantonese and English, and you know, sometimes together.
Yeah, yeah. You make sentences. And...
Yeah, or I have a secret language that my mom and my dad can't understand. It almost becomes very natural to the point where when you leave your family nucleus, you're like, well, what do you mean? This is totally normal. This is normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Did your parents, I'm curious, because I mean, we always think of stereotypical Asian parents having particular type of aspirations for their kids. Did your parents have similar ones for you, or were they really open to whatever it is you wanted to do?
So thankfully, I will say my parents have always been very supportive of my creative path. They put me into dance and like music when I was young. So I think that kickstarted my passion for the arts. And actually, funny enough, the reason why we moved back to Vancouver was because my parents felt like there was a lack of room in the Singapore education system for kids to kind of just be kids and do the arts and do the creative work and have fun. In Singapore, the academics is so strict. You know, you go to school like 7 a.m., you're a kid, and then you come home and you do swimming lessons and then immediately tutor and piano lessons. And it, like, that was the norm in Singapore. And we did that. But after 3 years, my parents were like kind of missing that North American, like free flow, draw something, like learn how to have a conversation, you know, things like that. The social skills were very, the emphasis was put on different stuff. So we moved back to Vancouver because of that. And so because of that initiative from the parents, I think deeply rooted in myself, we've always had room to be creative in the household. And my mom's super artistically creative. And so they've always encouraged that and left space. So I went to school for communications. Now I run a dance company. So in terms of, I think I'm very grateful for them leaving me room to figure that out. However, as an Asian family, or many Asian families do, we don't, or wasn't common for us to like express our love like verbally or like with hugs and I love yous. That was where like our, you know, we stray back to a bit more of an Asian stereotypical style. You know, we expressed our love through actions much more so. And I think for my parents, maybe that was something that they planned to do for all the kids, was, you know, them expressing their love was to give us room to, find our own paths. So they were thankfully very supportive. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And I hear you on the expressions of love, particularly for Asian immigrant families, is through service or food.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Very
let
much.
Me feed you, or let me pick you up from the airport. Like that's right. How you know I love you.
That's right. No hug.
No hug. No, I love yous. That's awkward. No hug.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for you, it was your parents making the conscious choice to move back and go, we want to give our children a chance to like express themselves creatively and figure that out. And I do think that's a little bit of a unique story, B, compared to a lot of other Asian immigrant
people. Yeah, I think so too. And I think that does deeply come from that blend, right? You know, again, a bit of Hong Kong, a bit of the British. And so I don't, you know, I'm not a parent right now, but I think, I imagine that's something you have to discuss and figure out how are you going to present that to your child. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do see definitely moments of that kind of blend of the multicultural backgrounds in my family.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So let's, I mean, I'm kind of picturing your, this is a very simplified way to think about your background, but I think about when you enter the first sort of stages of your career, and I know you've done, like once you graduated FSU, you did like a handful of social media jobs and content managing jobs, and you worked for a boutique store in Vancouver. But I guess like how did, we'll call it the trifecta of cultures in your household, or the things that your parents taught you, or the freedom that they gave you, how did that then leap into the earlier choices you started to make when you began working? Or did it? Or was it just like, I needed a job? Like, what did that look like?
So I think the freedom my parents gave me, it allowed me to really make a purpose-driven approach to the type of work that I wanted to do. You know, a lot of my jobs that I've worked prior kind of happened quite organically. It was like people that I had met and people that I knew through friends and family that were just doing cool things. And I genuinely wanted to help, and I wanted to be a part of what they were working on. So that part kind of all happened organically. And I was able to make these connections and kind of carve myself a little path. And I think I tried my best to kind of find a way to give value to these businesses, as well as like maybe learn a thing or two on my end as well. And that's how most of my roles kind of came to be. But because my parents gave me the room to explore, there wasn't a lot of, I would say, like time pressure, and you know, they gave me that time and that room. Then I was able to kind of find things that I truly resonated with, and I genuinely wanted to dive in and kind of make the most out of. I don't know what it is about myself. I find myself throwing my, I throw myself in uncomfortable situations often. I don't know why. I'm just drawn to it for some reason. But I think I do see, you know, a future there. I do see how much I can learn from every experience, and that's why I like to take up scary offers sometimes, and I like to just throw myself into, you know, new situations. Maybe I'm used to that as well from, again, childhood, moving around a little bit. Like, I'm okay with the discomfort of being out of my comfort zone. So yes, I do it, and I do it all the time. I do it every day now. It's like, there's this thing that I have no clue. I don't know where to start. I've heard about it. I've seen it, but I don't know how to do it. But here we go. I'm going to try. And I think if I tell myself that I will commit for, you know, I give myself, I think, a little period of time to be like, let's explore this path, try it, give it your all. And then by 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, that doesn't work, or that's something's not clicking, then maybe we reevaluate. But I do try my best to try it all. You have to start developing skills somewhere, and that's honestly how I've developed most of my skills, is by just trying it out. So
you like to live on the edge of discomfort, which is where most people don't like to be.
I think it's just proven to me, like, that's how I learn personally.
Yeah. Right. That's, yeah, that makes sense. So I'm hearing be that like the, a lot of the early, like once you graduated FSU, a lot of the early days of your career sounds like it was a lot of dabbling, right? Dabbling here, dabbling there. So I know that you, Chris, had formed CD before your sort of arrival, and he already had it established for a little bit, but how did you enter the picture into the studio? How did that happen?
So the CD that you know now, that we're all familiar with, that started closer to 2017. There was a shift in the direction of the company, and I came around. Well, I first found out about CD, I was started dating Chris.
Yes. So
started our personal,
yeah, naturally
first, yeah. And it just so happened that I was finishing my degree at SFU, working part-time, yes, dibbling and dabbling. And I was on the lookout for a new opportunity. So timing-wise, this kind of just came in at a good time. But essentially, CD was transforming to something. It was gaining a lot of attention. So the format that CD was taking in the early years was actually a 10-month program, you know, one training group, 6 hours a week, really tight-knit family. And it's a beautiful thing. That was the original crew. And so they were the heart and soul of CD. Near 2017, you know, CD was gaining traction around the city. More people wanted to be a part of it, but the 10-month commitment's pretty scary for maybe the average Joe. So Chris wanted to find a way to offer that same type of training or components of that training, but make it more accessible for other people. So that's when they started to experiment with the 3-month program. And again, bringing in new instructors, building a different program, a different platform. This is where CD really took a shift. And it just so happened that I was looking for something and I was around. And so I was like,
yeah, I was around.
I can help with this thing.
I'm here. Hey, I'm on the couch next to you. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's funny with like some career things, people think it's so intentional or it's, I mean, sometimes the choices are, but then there's cases like this where you're like, the timing just worked out. There was an opportunity there and it just happened to fall into place. So I was like, cool, let's give it a go.
I think I really like the challenge of it all. So, you know, there were these questions, they were trying to figure it out and I was watching, being a support system, of course, from the sidelines. But here I was like, I can do this. I can really add a lot of value to this situation right here. So I jumped in.
Right. When you joined and you and Chris, I guess, first started forming out the evolution of CD, did you already delineate your roles as, okay, Briggs, you're going to take up operations and sales and marketing and Chris is going to remain creative? Like, was that dynamic intact in the beginning or this formed over time?
Formed over time.
Okay.
I think because the company grew at such a rate, you know, it started as something that was maybe more of a side project for Chris and his original business partner. And then it really evolved over the years. So everything was built from scratch. Everything was developed over time and all the kinks had to be figured out as he went. So no, walking in, I started off just finding room for me to offer support really. And then it just grew and grew into bigger roles like that. But I think from the get-go, I've always been on the operational logistics side of the business.
Right. But it sounds like in the beginning, it was more like, where can I plug in some of the holes and just like pick up the pieces wherever I needed?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So what did those early years of, when you came on board, of CD feel like for the two of you as you were like building things from scratch, setting up a foundation, experimenting with your programming? Like, what was the behind the scenes?
I think starting anything is scary. It's always a little intimidating. You're now working with a larger client base, which means more people, more emotions, more opinions. And I think when you're not used to that, or if you're new to that type of growth, it can be for sure quite overwhelming. You know, you make a lot of mistakes and you just hope that you can make note of them, learn from them to be able to make a better plan for the next part. But I think our biggest thing that really kept us going and really committed to the vision was the community. So equally, they were the people that we wanted to do this for, right? And so because of that, we were able to keep that in mind and just push forward so that we could find a way to build a program that really worked for them.
Can you share, like, for people who've never experienced your dance studio before, like, let's say I was someone who's starting out in 2017, 2018, while you guys were experimenting with programs, like, what did the first versions of this look like?
The first versions of what we call the 3-month program, it was an hour and a half, 2 hours of dancing. We would essentially pick out components of the 10-month program that we really liked, you know, different instructors, different concepts, and then plug them in to the 3-month program. So there's a lot of testing, lots of experimenting with different ideas. I would say in the beginning, the 3-month program was less whole. It was less planned from start to finish what the experience was going to be completely. More so, this worked for this group, let's try it here, and then like see the response. So I think we started with just one single 3-month program. And then the interest just kept coming in. So as we were doing that, we were, you know, we started building different levels. We started building a new team of instructors to like also fit in. So lots of just trial and error.
So a lot of the story for businesses between year, let's call it like 1 to 6, is with the testing, it's just about getting your business model sort of right. Right. And to me, what's surprising is how long it takes to get the business model right. Yeah. And it sounds like that was definitely true for you guys.
For sure. So many iterations of what we have today. It's taken years. I think since 2017 till now, the 3-month program developed, there was at least 10 iterations of what we have until now. And I think they were all positive experiences, but throughout the trial and error and with the growth, and you're trying to manage different elements at the same time, there was lots and lots to learn.
Yeah. What felt the most challenging about that for your personality? Because I can imagine that feeling really difficult where you're maybe a little bit like, where's the end? Like, when are we gonna just finesse and pick a lane here?
Right.
How did that feel for you?
The hardest part of the progression of it all for me personally, because I'm a, I would say I'm pretty, I've got people pleaser tendencies. And so watching and being a part of this company that was growing and going through all these kind of growth spurts and pain points along the way, my biggest challenge for it all was managing how to deal with the client experience along the way. You know, as the company is growing, the brand and the culture has to evolve with it. You know, what you have today is not the same as what we had, you know, or when Chris opened up in 2013, just because, yeah, things have to change in order to allow things to run smoothly. So I would say the toughest part for me was learning that ultimately you can't make everyone happy. And that's hard, again, for people pleasing people. And so it's something I held on to for a long time. I would try, I would be like, okay, like I wanted all the feedback, I wanted to hear what everyone said, I want to talk to everyone and build a personal connection with every single person. And then I was taking a lot of it very personally too. You know, of course, when you commit your time and your energy into building something, you feel very emotionally connected to the result. And so the biggest growth and the biggest challenge for me was learning how to work with that, mold it into an energy that kept the main vision in mind the whole time. And being okay with making decisions that maybe wouldn't serve every single client that you currently have.
Oh, this one's so juicy, because I feel like it's true of anyone who runs a business, but it's particularly true of entrepreneurs who build things from scratch. And this is essentially your emotional baby. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you not let things penetrate to the point where it feels so personal? But at the same time, you're like, this is necessary for the evolution of our business. Is you're just going to start working with people that you're like, this is not the brand anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's it's a tricky one.
Yeah. How did you, or how have you overcome that? Or is it, you just compartmentalize it better now? Or
it took time for Chris and I actually to make a decision about how we wanted to approach that. And our result was that we needed to take some time to clarify crystallize this vision that we have for CD to such a specific point where now every decision that we both make separately or together for the company has that same, you know, final point in mind.
Totally.
And so once we have that, then things actually became easier because it no longer was, what do you think? What do I think? What do you feel? It was more, what is going to serve the business along the way?
Yeah. Ooh. And that's so hard to get to, that like crystallized direction and North Star. Mm-hmm. It's true. Like once you have that, decisions become easier, but trying to figure it out, you're like, I don't fucking know.
Yeah. You're like, I don't want to hurt these people's feelings. Or yeah. These people have invested this and that. And it's a tough journey, but.
Yeah. What's the, what would you say in one sentence is, I guess, the crystallized vision now for CD? Is it that mission about like the dance lifestyle for the grown? Is like that where you landed?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That felt the most true to what we were working towards. So our mission today for CD is to build a lifestyle, a dance lifestyle for the grown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has resonated with a lot of our dancers. And instantly, I think as a client, either you're like, yes, that's me, that's where I want to be, or you're like, nope, that's not really my vibe. And then you're able to make a clear decision. I think it's helpful for us running the business to have that clear vision, but also for clients who are wanting to see if this is a good fit for them.
Right.
Really right away, they can make a decision. And that's what we love about it.
Right. So when you say like a dance lifestyle for the grown, like how does that show up in practice? Is it, you know, the way you guys design your progressives? It's the types of teachers you bring on, you know, it's all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's a lot, all of the above. It's finding and building a community of people that understand one another to a certain point. I think we all come from so many different backgrounds, which is the best part of it. That's the coolest part of the community. But at a base level, you know, we have a certain expectation for how much time commitment we want to put in. We have a certain respect for the boundaries and for the lifestyles that we each have. There's a bit of a certain level of patience, a certain level of communication that's we're able to extend that to all of our community members, both staff and dancers, because we're all under the same understanding about that grown lifestyle. And we make that clear because there's so many dance options out there. It's a huge market, really. And for us, making this clear decision about what we want the community to be like, feel, and connect over, then that's how, you know, it's making a lot of sense for us.
Totally. And it's funny because like when we talk about it, it makes so much sense to go, oh, of course you need a vision and a direction. And of course, like you have to set that in order to make decisions about your business and the type of people you want to work with. But it's really difficult in practice.
You would be shocked how many businesses don't have that. I mean, it took us this amount of time to get this clear about what we wanted to do. I mean, we started in 2013 and today's 2023.
It's almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years of playing around, figuring it out. And then now I think today we feel really rooted in that.
Totally. I mean, that makes me both terrified and inspired at the same time. As like someone who's like building my own business, I'm like, okay, shit, it could take 10 years, but also it's okay if you don't have it figured out.
Just starting, but yeah.
Yeah, so interesting. So you talk, I mean, when we talk about that grown lifestyle, I heard you talk a lot about boundaries and respect for people's different lifestyles and all that kind of stuff. So I'm really curious about what it's been like to run your business with Chris, who is both your life partner and your business partner, because I feel like boundaries, we were talking about this before you got on the call, boundaries play such an important part when you have a personal and business relationship with someone and you live with them. How has your romantic relationship and your business relationship with Chris like evolved, and what has that gone through over time?
All the things.
He told me a story. I'll let you answer, but he told me a story once about it just like sticks out in my mind. You guys were lying in bed and he woke up and he looked over at you and was just like, did you send that email? And that's like what I picture. I don't know, but you tell me.
Well, thankfully we've grown since that point. Thankfully we're like, maybe that's not going to last like long term if we keep waking each other up with work info. So it takes a lot of thick skin, a pretty level head, and like so much communication to be able to balance a work and personal relationship with your partner. I think all business relationships are tough and require all of those things, but I could say that it really, really takes it to another level when you're just spending so much time together. You know, we live together. A lot of our business still runs out of our home. You know, he's got his office. I'm still, you know, got my office space too. So there's a lot of blended gray area. How do we separate all of these things? So, you know, going back to my kind of upbringing, I wasn't super comfortable talking about emotions and personal experiences. I don't like talking about my low points. I get my immediate reaction when someone wants to check in and I'm not feeling great is like, I'm good, I'm fine, you know, see you later, not a big deal. That's me. That's how I deal with uncomfortable situations when it's to do with my personal emotions. I'm cool with talking about my work struggles and my, you know, challenges that I'm facing, but when it's to do emotional, I'm not good. I'm not good at it. Versus Chris, who's like, let's talk about everything and hash it out now and put it all on the table. He loves just like finding an uncomfortable point and like, let's dig in there more, you know? And it's when you're on the receiving end and you're so opposite, it's so challenging. But we figured out a way to meet in the middle. And so actually one of the best tools that we found for each other was finding a way to really respect each other's time and energy. Even though you're in a romantic relationship, no one, I don't think, is able to be on the go, ready for anything at every time. And so our biggest thing that we've input into the relationship is kind of giving space to prepare. So what, for example, you know, now we ask each other, even simple questions, you'd think this is like pretty normal, but we started introducing a more verbal approach to how we switch between personal and work mode. Questions like, hey, are you in the headspace to chat about this in 10 minutes? Or like, hey, can we make some time tomorrow to focus on this project? You know, shockingly, the natural urge when you have fun ideas is like, hey, let's talk about this right now. Hey, do you know this thing? That email. Yeah, like it's, you know, you're excited sometimes. And so you just want to throw it out there. But both of us have multiple projects going on. We actually have like other passions and side projects and hustles that we also spend time doing. So being so urgent and immediate with some of these work requests is not helpful. It really is detrimental really to the relationship when you're not respecting each other's time that way. So this has been the hugest, biggest thing for us is
that makes so much sense because yeah, to your point is everyone processes differently too, right? And what I'm hearing from you is you're much more like processed and reflective when you want to think about things or when you want to respond to things. And maybe Chris is more like a little bit more immediate, a little bit more urgent, but I think it's super important. Like, cause I think what you're trying to say is like, how do you compartmentalize some of these things? So it's easier for your thinking and it's easier for your emotional regulation. And even in corporate businesses, this is huge. Like this is why meeting culture is so exhausting. It's because like you're constantly asking people to be on and to be prepared to be in this creative mode, but creativity requires its own time and space, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love some of the questions you guys asked each other. Like, are you good to talk about this now or later?
Yeah. Like yeah. You'd think that would be a very easy question to ask or be natural, it would come naturally to you, but shockingly,
it's not when you're excited.
We absolutely had to practice that. Like, I'll be like working on something, so stoked. Oh my God, I want to show him right now. And then I approach and he's just like not in that headspace at all. And vice versa, that happens all the time. And of course, because we're two separate human beings doing separate things. So that's been a huge.
Totally. And I can imagine too, like, I don't know if you feel this way, but it would breed resentment if you're like, okay, I'm really excited about something and I want to tell him, and he either ignores you or doesn't give you the reaction you want. And then you feel disappointed.
Absolutely.
Right?
You're taking it personal when it's really not, but you can't help it because you're invested, right?
Totally. That's big. That's super big for you too. Well, I'm sure it's still difficult at times. I'm sure you guys don't always get it right. But it sounds like after, 7 to 10 years of crap with it, like, okay, we've sort of figured out how to live with this and how to peel some boundaries in place as well.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that's great for people to listen to who are thinking about starting relationships, and particularly with their, businesses, particularly with their partners. Because I think sometimes people don't always think about how going into business with someone affects your relationship. It's a big one.
Yeah.
Can we talk about B a little bit? So I've had this on my mind a lot as I've been talking to a lot of entrepreneurs and an entrepreneur myself. So I feel like a lot of the rhetoric out there, the things we see around social media on entrepreneurship, is over glorified. And it drives me up the wall. I've had so many vent talks with friends about this, where when people see entrepreneurship, they see freedom. They see flexibility, they see no authority. And I think all those things are true for sure. But I also think sometimes it's over glorified and they're only painting one side of the entrepreneurship picture. So for someone who's thinking about entrepreneurship, what are the sides of it that people misconceive or underestimate or don't actually think about that is key to be a good entrepreneur?
A big lesson I've learned is that you cannot do it by yourself. I think the coolest part about the internet and the resources we have is that there's so much information out there that's being shared on how to build a business, how to be an entrepreneur. You know, you have a good idea, go for it. And that's, everything's going to work out fine. But, you know, so many businesses, small businesses, don't make it past 3, 4, 5 years because there's a humongous element of entrepreneurship that is really mentally and physically draining if you're not prepared for it well. So learning how to manage things, you've got the marketing, the hiring, the maintaining a team, finances, you know, how are you going to stabilize your emotions through business growth and also low periods, you know, thinking you have a plan and then the plan gets completely destroyed. How are you going to come out of those things? I think trying to manage all those things, learning them for the first time, and then on top of that, being like, I still have to be improving and working on my actual product or service, making sure that's also going well. I think there's a humongous amount of elements that go into it. And for sure, there's like a lot of people you can hire to bring in to the team to support you in those fields. But the most challenging part of it all is that it's such a mental game. And it can be a very lonely journey if you don't feel compelled to share, open up, ask for help. I think having a really incredible support system, people you can trust, it's huge to the success of that, the entrepreneurship.
Yeah, that makes sense too. And do you find, these are the other, so all those things make sense to me, but these are the other two pieces. And I wonder if you find it. One is, you talked about, it's all on your shoulders. Like as an entrepreneur, so for you and Chris, everything is on you, but that includes menial tasks. So when someone sends an email into hello@cd.com, who's responding? It is you, right? Your customer support, your sales, your marketing. And I think sometimes people think with entrepreneurship, it's just about idea creation and vision execution. But sometimes you're going to do shit in entrepreneurship that you don't like, right? Would you find that that's been true for you? Like you're probably up late at night, like sending emails. You're like, I hate this.
All day. That's
you. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many things. It's all the small things. Exactly. You overlook them when you're excited about your new idea, your new product. But it's making a system that's going to work for you to manage all those other things that totally. You think of. It's not the fun stuff. It's super not fun, but it's got to be done. And most of the time, it's the most crucial part to actually growing the business.
I feel like the admin, I'll just like call it admin, is the most underrated, but the, one of the most important things you can do to run your business smoothly. And then how about, I mean, I think about this for someone who asks all the time about, you know, I want to be an entrepreneur, but I'm not sure about the money. And I think there's a lot, again, a lot out there on social where it's like, you know, launch in 1 year and make six figures. And I know for coaches, I get spammed all the time about turning my business into like a six-figure business. But I mean, in your opinion, is that the reality of making money? Probably not, right?
Absolutely not. Absolutely. Of course, there are one-offs, and there's the whole concept of becoming viral, and the internet does provide to some lucky people an incredible spurt, you know, in a short amount of time. That does happen. I believe that it is out there, but I think for the majority of entrepreneurs and small businesses, it is a consistent, like small wins that's going to get you there slowly, but it's all about the commitment to it, and it's absolutely going to take so much longer than you most of the time are going to be prepared for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's taken you guys almost 10 years now to finance your own studio, right? Or be in like a financially viable place for you to feel comfortable to do that, right?
Right.
Yeah. How do you, I mean, I don't, you don't have to overshare what your finances have looked like, but how do you manage like the ebbs and flows of just like keeping the lights on at your house and like maintaining a livable income for the two of you?
So the one reason why we've taken so long also to open a studio is because we wanted to keep our overhead as low as possible.
Makes sense.
The format that we used to. So prior to, you know, the new studio being built, we rented studio space from other studios around the city, which really limits the flexibility that you have. We're running on someone else's schedule, we're running on, you know, other people's rules and regulations, and it really constrains the commitment to your own vision and your brand that you'd like. And you know, again, but if your goal here is to keep the operation costs low and really maximize how much you can get back in return, it's a good way. And you're able to like be flex. It works. It can work. And it has worked for us for years. But the reason why we're taking this next step is because we were really missing some of those things. We think as we crystallize that vision, there were certain things that were just a must for us in order to make that happen.
Totally. And now you're just in a stage where you're like, okay, like this is, we want a little bit more permanency around this. This is how we want to do it. But yeah, I think that makes sense. Like when you think about, you know, making profit, it's a pretty simple formula, right? It's like keeping your fixed expenses low and your income a little bit higher. And you just like constantly playing that game, but there are trade-offs to some of these choices. So for you guys, it's operating through different studios, like, yeah, kept the operation cost low, but then it limited us in our freedom and ability to do things our way. But I think you just have to make choices, and there's going to be pros and cons to all of that, right?
Always. It's always a pros and cons list, and which one's bigger, what side's better.
Yeah. Which side has less cons. Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, this is a really nice segue actually into like the future of CD. So we've talked a lot about the evolution, the part you've played into it, you know, the relationship with you and Chris and how that's evolved. But I mean, really excitingly, you guys are opening your first studio in Mount Pleasant, Vancouver, right above 33 acres, which is primo. If you're not from Vancouver, like primo location. So I know this is big, has been big emotionally for the two of you. What has this process felt like to start renovating and getting ready to open your own space?
It is very exciting. It is quite overwhelming. It is super scary. it's so much foreign territory for me. And again, in the operations role, I am piecing all the things together, making all the ends kind of meet. And that's my goal here. So now I'm learning how to work with a general contractor. I'm designing a space from scratch.
Mm.
You know, I'm now sorting through finances and lease space and a landlord, incorporation, so many new things we weren't, that wasn't on my menu from before. But I honestly have a good feeling about it all. I feel like there's going to be so much growth. I really like the direction we're going. Everything's feeling like they're coming together slowly. And I'm finding myself for the first time, maybe ever, starting to reach out and ask for help more than I've ever done before.
Interesting.
Definitely, again, in the past, keep it in. I'm good. I'm fine. I'm good. Like, don't need help. That's how I like to be. But this, maybe something about the confidence in our vision, the general plan and the community that we're building, it's feeling good and I'm feeling rooted in all of that. And so now I'm feeling like reaching out more, sharing that experience, being a bit more vulnerable with the whole process, because there's so many other people that have experienced it, are experiencing it, are inspired by it. And so it's been very, very a nice, refreshing feeling.
Totally. I can imagine the internal process, because what comes to mind is I had Viv McCormick, who runs Flax Home, like the retail company. And she was saying that it was easy to launch and to start. And I kind of think of that with CD, not that everything's easy, but it's a little bit easier to be scrappy, but then it's actually way more challenging when you're ready to scale. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the stage that CD's at. So when you talk about needing to be vulnerable and sort of getting over that, I don't need help, I'm good thing, it's actually necessary for you guys to scale in this next stage, because I mean, learning by yourself can only take you so far when it comes to working with contractors, like running your own studio space, like all that kind of stuff, right?
Exactly. It's no longer about you at all.
Yeah.
Like, get over it and like, let's start opening this conversation up with more people. Yeah.
But it's so tough. Like, do you feel like that's a pain point for you, because you always think of yourself as like a capable person? I always find that's my shtick, is I'm like, I'm capable. I don't fucking need to ask you for help. Is that what it is for you?
A little bit of that, a little bit. I'm a fixer by nature.
Yeah.
There's a problem, I can fix it. I'm not usually scared of conflict resolution, because I know deeply that there's a way I'm gonna figure something out. And so that's always been how I'm doing it. I'm trying to convert that ideology into more of a preparational format, like thinking forward, planning for the problems rather than reacting to problems. Mm. That's been a big shift for me. And yeah, I know, and because I'm a fixer, I know I'm capable of doing a whole sort of lots of things. Being in this, you know, role, I'm constantly doing that. But the newest part of my journey is preparation.
Stand and prepare. And I think sometimes too, like maybe admitting, I don't know if you feel this way, but admitting to yourself that there's some things you just can't fix or you need help fixing, right?
That's been a big, a revelation for me. Or there's like, maybe you don't have to fix it.
Oh, that one's big. I don't like leaving things unfixed.
Yeah. Oh, it's the biggest. If you're the personality to have to fix things, it is the hardest thing to do. But it's a good lesson to practice.
Yeah, I read a quote like really recently around this, which was like, it's okay to leave things broken.
Like, painful.
It's so painful. I'm like, what do you mean it's broken? That means it has to be fixed. Come on. But I honestly think Briggs, so many, especially women, can relate to that, because I think women more innately are fixers. Like a really hard time not fixing things.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I always go into the emotion, but like, so you're opening the studio, super exciting, all the feelings. What can people expect from this new studio? So clearly you're going to have a lot of like similar programs, similar vibes, but anything different, new, jazzy?
Yes. Lots of jazzy things. we're building a completely customized space for the CD fam. So we want our dancers and our guests to be able to walk in and feel like they've entered a different zone. You know, imagine CD history and past events posters plastered on the wall. We're looking for creating a cozy community space, but also room for someone to come in, get away from work life, just push hard for an hour and a half. But then when you come out of class, have that very friendly and welcoming interaction with the rest of the community. Programs are gonna stay a very similar format. We're just offering more of them. We've got new instructors. We're so excited about them. And we're also introducing a new training program. So instead of only having the signature progressive, which is our 3 month with the performance at the end, we also want to offer a route for some dancers who maybe want to focus in on certain aspects of their movement, maybe grooving, footwork, sharpness, dynamic. So certain elements of movement, we'll be creating new training programs just based around those. And those would be only 4 weeks long. Some will be like 2 week progressive. So we always love to keep a progressive format. We think that is the best route for us and for the community. So we're always going to stick with this kind of progressive format. We like the commitment. We like asking people to show up because we've seen that work time and time again.
Totally.
So yeah, that will be what it is. We're really, really excited. It's the walls are going up this week. It's like everything's starting from scratch. So it's a very rewarding journey to be able to see and build something from the ground up.
Totally. And I'm so excited for you too. I mean, so for those people listening, I've been part of the CD dancer experience, and I said this to Chris when he was on this podcast, it's such a unique spirit and like emotive feeling you guys create with this community. It's actually so unique to the point where I'm loyal to the core. Like, I've tried other studios and I just can't, but it's like, it's actually that special. Like, it's that tangible. But B, what would you say, like, if someone was listening to this, be like, you know, I thought about dancing, but I'm like a non-dancer and I feel really intimidated about coming to check this out. Like, what would you tell someone like that?
So I am the instructor also for our beginner levels. And I'd like to say I'm a pretty approachable person. But the community and the feel that we want to create in the new space and what's already existing is a very warm energy. We invite everyone to come in, but we also equally invite everyone to show up. So what you can expect coming into the CD community is kindness, friendly faces, open arms, but an expectation to put in the work, because we want to help people grow and we want to help people become more diverse and experienced dancers. So it's an interesting balance that we found between a nice recreational vibe, but equally something that's requires time and energy to be put in and put aside for being a part of the community.
Totally. And I think that's you actually articulated so beautifully. That's the magic, I think, of the vibe you guys have created at the studio. It's you feel challenged and, you know, like you're progressing incrementally in this craft of dance, but it's also, there's no pretentiousness as well, which I think some other dance studios, you come in and it's incredibly intimidating to the point where it's crippling. But you guys do a nice balance of that, where it's like, I feel like I'm challenged, I feel like I'm learning, but also I don't feel so intimidated, especially if I don't dance.
Absolutely. It's a scary thing to do, especially as an adult, especially starting late. You know, there's so many obstacles in your way, and we recognize that, but we really wanted to create and show people that it's possible. You can do it later in life. You can start something scary, a new hobby, a new creative path that's later in life. and still feel really good about it and still, you know, get a lot of, find out a lot of new things about yourself during the process.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, I'm so stoked. I'm so stoked to come see this studio.
Me too.
That's awesome. So let's close up with a little bit of a lightning round, B. I mean, we've talked about that. We've hit so many themes in your incredibly interesting career. And now the next phase of CD, I think, is going to be really exciting to watch. But a couple questions for you, like lightning round. One is, you know, as you reflect on the conversation we've just had, what do you think will always be true about the way you make choices in your career and will like continue to be true?
Three things. Kindness first, always. It's something that I've always reminded myself. It comes naturally to me, but I want to help spread that with other people. And that's something that CD Fam really does. Commit hard and learn from those around you. Those are three things I would say I absolutely, you know, I have them written down. I'm going to remind myself of those three things. And if I feel like if I can carry those three values over the next few years, multiple years of running business, then I think I can feel really fulfilled with the work that I do.
Totally. Yeah, your pillar number two is, I can vouch, that's very, very true. You're a commit hard type of person. On a personal level, like what have you been most proud of for your, in terms of your career evolution?
I'm proud of the personal growth I've had in my confidence. So I forced myself to listen to my last podcast with you prior to this, and fuck, I was...
Did you hate it?
I just cringing for 39 minutes. Like, I, oh my God, brutal. And not because what we talked about was not valuable and good. It was because I could hear myself not speaking with any conviction. You were asking me simple questions and I was uncomfortable even like explaining how big of a role I play in the community, you know? And there's just been so many lessons learned over the past 2 years since that last podcast. We've taken time off. I've grown in many ways. I'm trying new things. So it's nice to be able to look back today and feel good about taking ownership over the decisions that I make now.
That's huge. That's so huge. I didn't think you sound like you lacked conviction, but I can totally appreciate how when you listen to yourself, you're like, ugh, this is so awful. I think that's a great thing to be. Okay. And then, I mean, I always come back to this at the end of the podcast. The reason why I wanted to run this is because I feel like sometimes we have career conversations in the dark. And when we don't have them in the dark, they're very aspirational and conceptual and people have a hard time wrapping their heads around it. And I know we talked about some of that in here, but so here's a question for the audience and people listening is, what's the one thing that you would tell others when they're trying to figure out their careers or moving through transitions? What would you share in terms of like words of wisdom or advice?
I believe that everyone wants to find work that's fulfilling to them. And I would suggest being proactive about finding that for yourself. But that doesn't mean work here, take an internship here, volunteer here. Where I would start is grab a piece of paper and a pen and make a list. The prompt for the list is going to be, when do you feel most beautiful / powerful / happy? And then make a list of 20 things that you do. Maybe you do it once a year. Maybe it's your everyday thing. So taking my dog for a morning walk, connecting with old friends, singing at the top of my lungs in the car, like going to the gym, like what are some of those little things that you naturally gravitate towards that you find when you do them, you feel good? What are those things that seem small to you? Write those things down, like make a big list and And then take a minute to kind of pick three or four things from that list that really stand out to you. I did this recently for myself, and I found that a lot of the things I was connecting with most were things that I get to do today in my job. And that's taking care of others. That's participating in a community that is very warm and welcoming. Because I think when you lean into some of those fields, let's say you spend a couple of, you know, spend more time doing the dog walking or connecting with old friends, and you'll be surprised, I think, to see who might pop up in those conversations, what type of things you might learn, what kind of new inspiration might come to you when you're doing those things and leaning into those, making time for some of those things that already genuinely make you feel good. I think when you take a minute to get out of your regular routine and get out of your comfort zone a bit, you can get into a new headspace that could be really inspiring for you.
And then for folks listening who are like, this has been inspiring. I really want to get involved with CD. I really want to see what's happening with the studio. Where can people find CD on social, or how can they get in touch?
Find us on Instagram at Culturally Defined. Find us on our website, culturallydefined.com. Join our newsletter. Currently, we're in the renovation process, so we're not offering programs and classes, but we're planning for the release of a new schedule, a spring schedule, very shortly. And our new studio is going to be in Mount Pleasant. So that's where you can stay in touch, and we would love to see you there.
Yeah, thanks, B. And so, folks, I'll make sure that where you can find CD on Instagram and the website will be part of the podcast link here with B. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. And until next time, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening.